Welcome to Six Again, your go-to rugby league podcast with hosts Adam Hoy and Jared Newton. Let's kick off.
Welcome into the Six Again wrap of round nine, NRL 2022 season. Day later than normal, but here we are. My name's Adam. I'm the Manly Seagull fan, and on the other end of the line, we have...
Jared, the bottom of the ladder Newcastle fan.
That's it. You guys look horrible. I was trying to think of one positive, but really not one there.
The only positives we have is in our starting 17, there's only four players who played in the weekend that would actually make our strongest team.
Oh, there you go.
So, you know what? There's the question about depth and what the Roosters did last year, but, you know, that was an outlier as far as I'm concerned. There's not many teams who would do well with only four of their starting 17 field.
True. I was going to say maybe Melbourne, but...
Anyone would struggle with that kind of stuff, so, yeah.
All right. We are going to go through the 8 games from round 9. We're going to look at the injuries and judiciary, the charges from that, and also this a signing that happened over the weekend. Before we wrap this one up pretty quickly, before we do all that, we will jump over to footytips.com.au and have a look at the Six Again Footy Tipping Comp sponsored by Hop Nation Brewing. And there was only one tipster in round 9 who scored 7, and that was Timbo21. And then I'm going to say 60%. Pick 6 out of 8 seemed to be the most common score with around average of 5.3. So I'm not going to go through all of those because we'd be here for ages. That brings us to a total score update. So Toby Hunt is still on top with 66 points, followed by Reggie Sidestep on 62. Timbo 21 has jumped up to 59 points along with myself. And there is a group there at 57. So... it's going to be something pretty special to catch Toby Hunt because his lowest score so far has been 5.
I know no one's going to believe this. Well, firstly, the only people who would have got 8 on the weekend in the world were Parramatta supporters, but...
Broncos, I'd say.
Yeah. On the other hand, I know I wasn't on a tipping comp and no one would have believed me, but I actually picked Parra last week.
Did you?
No one believes me, but I...
No, I did, because you always say they get up after a crappy game, they get up for the big teams and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and I was just kind of expecting that kind of game, and it definitely fucking didn't disappoint.
It actually happened. And what also actually happened, actually, no, we'll do street comp first, and then we'll go what actually happened. So.
That's a new segment. What actually happened, actually happened.
It would actually happen. New segment. Crypto Nostradamus, is still on the current long streak of 8. So longest streak at the moment, still 8. Methodical Flamethrower second there on 6. And the overall longest streak comp is still 15 by _3_, followed by 1 by the Dish Sharks. And every week I come in here, there are more and more people jumping on and having a go at the streak competition. So keep that rolling. Probably maybe a couple of weeks away from someone challenging the 15 in a row, but you never know. Could happen if someone goes balls to the wall and picks 5 or 6 in a round. All right. Let's have a look at the results of Nick's picks from the weekend. And he pulled through for you guys. So if you followed his advice, good job. He did had a multi with Cowboys winning by 20 and Storm winning by 20. Had $7 on that at $4.50. And I went something similar and I literally missed by 1 point, which is annoying to say the least. So I had Cowboys also winning 20 plus. I had Sharks winning 20 plus because they gave slightly better odds at $6.34. And they, of course, won by 19, despite having 2 players off the field at different times of the game. So it's a bit of a bummer for myself, but well done to Nicky Wally Wallace there. And Nick also had a single on two tries or more for Justin Olam. That did not come through for him. So that gives him, what, a $37 improvement there on his overall. Sorry, not 37, 31, 57. So add that onto his $70, gives him $101.57 minus the $3 out on Olam, puts him at $98.57. My $10.50 bet did not come through, so I'm down to $140, and Jared is still sitting at $90.75. All righty. Let's do this. You want to start with the signings or signing? So,
yeah. So, well, there's more signings than signing. There's a few signings the last couple of days.
True. Let's start with the big one. So, well, the biggest one, I guess. Whole bunch of subjectivity around Manly over the last few weeks with regards to Kieran Foran and his contract situation. It is official. He has signed with the Gold Coast Titans on a two-year deal for 2023 and 2024. It's pretty much came down to Seagulls not being able to fit him in their salary cap, despite, what was he asking, like $300,000, which is still... does not bode well for the salary cap. So since his return to Manly, he's played probably his best footy since he left Manly, we'd say, the first time. And as a Manly fan, I'm disappointed. I can understand it, but I would have liked to see him at the club next year. I don't think the youngsters there are quite where they need to be yet. And Manly is in a premiership window, in my opinion. The talent they have is elite in some positions, which covers the flaws in other positions. And Foran was one of the key members of ensuring that that chance of a premiership was still there. How the shape's Manly going into 2023, you'd assume Josh Schuster would slide back to 5'8", where he's played the majority of his career outside the last season a bit for Manly. Foran a slot, you'd assume straight into the 5'8 role at the Titans and provide some guidance and obviously leadership and calmness, I guess, to their attack, something that they haven't really had since Scott Prince was there.
Yeah, I find it hilarious that they signed him, considering 6 months ago they let go of Jamal Fogarty.
Yep.
They're like, oh, we need some leaders. I'm like, yes, Jamal Fogarty had probably, I don't know what the situation is behind closed doors, but Fogarty's essentially a younger version of Kieran Foran. They've probably got...
I would not say that.
He's 28.
Play completely different games.
But the idea of Foran is experienced half to control the team. That's how I would describe Fogarty. And let's not forget the fact Fogarty was their captain as well.
But AJ Brimson's played more games than Fogarty has.
Yeah, but he doesn't have the calm head. We both said we could believe Titans left guard.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I wouldn't have blamed you to start with. They wouldn't have put him here. But
yeah, but the reason they signed Foran was the exact same reason we're surprised they let go of Fogarty.
Yes.
And he hasn't played as much as NRL as a normal 28-year-old half. But in saying that too, he displayed why he was playing the control and the maturity of someone who would have played 100 more games as a half. So I don't know what happened behind a closed door, if Fogarty pushed for the release or Titans is for Toby Sexton, as reported in the media, which is genuinely wrong, was the number one choice. But hard and fast of it is that if Gold Coast let go of Fogarty thinking Toby Sexton was their future, and then 6 months later sign Foran, that is the definition of a red flag that they're not planning ahead.
The one thing there is they also play different positions.
That's irrelevant. That's
no, it's not.
Completely, it is. Because you can't tell me that, oh, sorry, all you have to do is look at their media release. We're happy with having someone so mature, who's going to control the team and everything. As I said, that is Jamal Fogarty. Kieran Foran is older.
Well, I think what you're saying there is if Toby Sexton's the future, you'd be shifting Fogarty to 5'8" then.
Well, what do you do to... What's their halves next year? You got Sexton. Who drops out, in other words? You got Brimson, Campbell, and Sexton, and Foran. Like, that's their 6, 7, and 9. 6, 7, and 1. So who drops out in your mind?
Campbell.
Campbell, right.
He's the only one who I can't see playing two positions.
But he's the best fullback out of all of them. But debatable. Look,
debatable. I have Brimson even same conversation.
I hope it's not the case, but I just think they've made a mistake. They realize their mistake, and
now they're trying to cover themselves.
Yeah, went out and bought old man Foran, which
who would you rather sign, Nikarima or Foran?
Shit, that's a big call. One's an inconsistent player, but one's a consistently injured player when he doesn't play for Manly. I don't know what the hell they feed him at.
They can't keep anyone else on the field, just for him. Bloody hell.
Yeah, I just don't understand what they feed him at Manly. That he's less injured at Manly than he is at Bulls, Parramatta, or Warriors. God, he doesn't get injured.
I think we'll look at the other signings in the Magic Round preview, just so we get, because this one's already later than planned. So let's go into Judiciary Report. So there's a fair bit of action over the previous round with only like 8 or 9 players charged, with 3 receiving suspensions. So Joe Stimpson, Tavita Payne Guy, Jeremy Marshall King, Ryan Madison all receive $1,000 fines, all for grade 1 charges, dangerous contact for Stimpson and Marshall King, contrary conduct for Pangai and Madison. Tom Gilbert, $1,800 fine for grade 1 careless high tackle, $3,000 fine for Francis Molly, grade 1 crusher tackle. Jeez, that's a massive difference in fine. Between a crusher tackle and a high tackle, or even a grade 1 dangerous. That's like triple. I didn't even notice that before. That's triple the fine if it's a crusher tackle compared to a dangerous contact.
Yeah, and which is weird because last year it's been like 4 weeks gone for any crusher tackle. Now they reduce it to fines.
And Toby Rudolph, grade 1 crusher tackle, $1,500 fine.
Yeah, I feel like... Yeah, that
doesn't make sense. That's the same as Francis Molo, but it's double the
Francis cost. Molo has a worse hit rap sheet, doesn't he?
It doesn't matter. It's a brand new thing this year.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm thinking that's just a typo there for Francis Molo. Because all the rest are in that $1,000 fine. Oh no, he's accepted a $3,000 fine. Jeez. Ouch. Okay, so for the 3 suspensions, you had Lindsay Collins, grade 2. Careless high tackle, put in an early guilty plea. He'll be fined for a match. This is one of the ones that was just lazy and dumb, but definitely did strike the head with a shoulder. Who was it running the ball back? Oh, it was Corey Thompson. He was already stopped in a tackle with Crichton, kind of stationary, unable to be avoided. Like, Corey Thompson was unable to avoid the contact. And, yeah, that was a fair simp in there. And then the 2 big ones from the weekend, Will Kennedy, 2 matches for a grade 3 careless high tackle. Jesse Ramian, 3 matches for a grade 3 careless high tackle. Now, the Will Kennedy one, do you think, or do we see this as an overreaction? Or is this a reaction to the Daniel Tupou one and the media that followed from it?
I fucking hope not, but I wouldn't be surprised. That's how NRL... referees are dictated to referee.
Yeah. So Daniel Tupou got what, 1 match and did not get Simbin during the game?
No, and then complete opposite. Old mate gets 3 matches and sent off.
Oh, 2 matches and sent off. Yeah, yeah, so
look, it really annoyed me a couple of weeks ago with the high tackle. No, sorry, the blow up a couple of weeks ago about someone in the media calling Gus and Freddie dinosaurs. What was the incident again? I can't off the top of my head.
That was a
spear tackle. The spear tackle. So yeah, they got called dinosaurs because they said wasn't the worst thing in the round. But then the media turned around and they questioned the Corey Horsburgh situation as a high tackle, which, you know, that's debatable.
Yeah.
But what that penalty is meant to do is to stop these kind of tackles happening.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you penalise a low-level one, the high-level one shouldn't necessarily happen. So anyone who criticises the Corey Horsburgh situation, when you actually think about it, that's in reaction to stopping this kind of shit happening. Because while it was an accident, while I don't think Will Kennedy meant any malice, reality of it is he cooked him around the neck and that could have caused a significant amount of damage. And that's why the penalty for Corey Horsburgh is there. You know what I mean?
Yes, I can see that. What I don't like is we know they're never going to say it out loud, but if it's an illegal tackle and it causes injury or damage, it'll always be a longer suspension than the exact same illegal tackle if the player's not injured. And we know that happens at the judiciary. They won't come out and say it, but you can see it in the matches handed out. Now, it'd be interesting. I just wonder why that's not the same on the field, because Reece Walsh, who got tackled, got up exactly the same as when Daniel Tupou tackled
whoever he tackled.
Ravalawa.
That's a hell of a neck to get around.
Will Kennedy threw his hand up. I thought even the sin bin. Oh, sorry. I thought the send off was harsher. I thought a sin bin would be sufficient for that one. This was what I first thought the initial one was, the Tupou one, being stepped back on the inside and throwing an arm out. And that's exactly what happened. I'd like to see anyone else who's not in the elite category there not do the same thing or even get contact.
Well, actually,
most of us would have been stepped clean.
That step was magnificent. Magnificent. And I'd like to see anyone lower than that actually even react quick enough to get your fucking
arm. That's what I mean. We wouldn't have even got contact on him. So
we would have just been on the ground, just like walking off the field, going, you know what, I've had my run, let's just go home.
And 99 times out of 100, if we're in the same situation, we would have thrown an arm out. The speed, obviously, then wrapped his arm around the neck. I'm not saying it's not a penalty. I'm not saying it's not a sin bin. I think it's a sin bin. He makes contact with the head regardless of how it happens. But to me, it wasn't a send-off. And with his legs kicking up like that, it actually makes it look more dramatic than what it was. It's not like he's picking him up around the neck and slamming him down. The arm's actually flat across the chest and then it rips up after the momentum goes through. So I think 2 weeks is okay. I would have been happy with a sin bin in a week. But
to be honest,
I'm glad they didn't go 3 or 4.
Yeah, I think the suspension is good, but I'm glad that Warriors still lost against 12/11 players. That wasn't the reason the Sharks lost.
No. The Warriors
it's kind of magnified how much the Warriors are struggling, to be honest.
Yes, I selfishly also I wanted him back on because they won by 19, not 20. And then Jesse Ramien, 3 matches for watching it live looked like a wicked tackle. And then you turned around the other side. At no point was he, in my opinion, going out. At no point at all in NRL is someone going out to thinking in their head, I'm going to go out there and smash this guy in the head because I want to hurt him. This is going to sound so bad, but I honestly think Ramien's a victim of how tall he is compared to Ewan Aitken. And he just didn't bend his back enough to get down to Aitken's height for the shoulder to hit shoulder. And without making that effort, his shoulder hit him in the head. So I think he did what he'd planned to do, which is put a shot on to dislodge the ball. But at no point, I think he's running out trying to smack him in the head with his shoulder. Again, Sin Bin, out of the two, I think that was more of a send-off offence than the other one. But again, I'm happy with that being a Sin Bin because I don't believe there was malice in the tackle itself. He got the timing wrong more than anything. Three matches for that under these rules it is fair. Yeah, I would have been happy to see a 1-2 match ban rather than a 2-3. But that's just me. At least there's some form of kind of consistency with the Ramian one, not so much the Will Kennedy one. All right. Biggest story, I think, is the injuries that came out of this round. So Cam Murray for the Rabbitohs is undergoing a minor procedure on his reconstructed shoulder. He's expected to miss 3 to 4 weeks. This is a week after David Fifita's out for a month. So I dropped David Fifita, bring Cam Murray in. Again, selfish point of view, but come on, guys. You're killing my fantasy footy team here. Meanwhile, scans have confirmed Ryan Pappenhausen sustained a hamstring tear and a PCL injury against the Dragons. He's out for at least a month and will pretty much dismiss any chance of him making his State of Origin debut for New South Wales. Remus Smith will have surgery after scans confirmed he suffered a ruptured pec. He's out for 10 to 12 weeks, so a double blow for the Melbourne backline. Jared Croker's set to miss 2 to 3 weeks with a shoulder injury after his first game of the year. Charles Nguyen-Cookstar is expected to play against the Sharks in Magic Round after a leg cork. Ewan Aitken, Edric Lee and Ken Mamalo need to pass HIAs in order to play this week. Sam Verrills has had surgery after suffering a fractured collarbone in the defeat of the Titans. Jack Johns from Newcastle will spend time on the sidelines after suffering a suspected broken arm. And Mike Acevo is closing in on his first game of the season as he nears a return from a ruptured ACL from the second half of last year. So the Eels are hopeful to have him back in round 12 or 13. So some good news there to finish off a pretty horrid injury segment that occurred through round 9. Now, we've already seen the team list, and Nick Meaney to fullback's what Bellamy's going with for the Pappenhausen injury. Completely different style player, and Meaney was finally finding his niche on the wing there for the Storm. So when we look through the team list in a bit more detail, we'll break that down. And also Cam Murray, big loss for the Rabbits. I'm assuming they'll probably plug Arrow there and fix a second row up somewhere else. Maybe I haven't looked at their team list. Who else they got in the second row? A Liam Knight or a Jacob Host or something like that. But we'll get to that.
There's plenty of
next episode. There. Cool. We'll have a quick break there and come back and wrap up the 8 games from round 9, including couple upsets. All righty. So let's start all the way back to last Thursday with probably the biggest FU we've seen of the season. Adam Reynolds leads the Broncos to a stunning victory down in Sydney. And I think the aftermath of this was rumours of how Reynolds was treated by the Rabbitohs during and after contract negotiations, but that's neither here nor there for what we're talking about right now, but more could come to light from that. Best game he's played in a Broncos jersey yet, Jared?
That 20 minutes we got, the half we came in, drawed him last week, but on the whole, by far the best game he's played.
Yeah.
Scarily good.
Scores a try, sets up two others, kicking game on point. And there were times in this game where the Broncos were cruising. Like, they looked like winning was easy all of a sudden. And it's not something I thought I'd be saying of the Broncos, especially in the first half of the season after their last 2 years. But I gotta be honest, it didn't look at any point like the Rabbitohs were going to be able to come back and win, despite even when they got their first try on the board, and despite a couple of no try calls. They had a couple of slick moves. When the timing was on, it looked good, but when the Broncos had the ball in hand, they were just picking up yards, picking up meters, controlling the ruck, spreading the ball, finding space out wide, pushing them over through the middle, Pat Carrigan starting up front. Tom Flegler was really impressive, and that's coming up against a South pack. That's one, it has been a strong suit for them for the last few seasons, and you've still got Cam Murray in there, you've still got Joe Arrow in there, Colin Matangi's been in good form. All of a sudden, it's hard to work out what to make out of these Rabbitohs.
Yeah, look, they're
missing are the trailer that much.
Oh, are they though?
That's what I said.
I don't know if they're, I don't think they are. I think, like, I know there's a lot of criticism being at Cody Walker, but I've said it for years and years. He is legitimately good when there's a controlling half right next to him. And that's what he's been like forever. And unfortunately, that is Lachlan Elias is not experienced enough to put Cody Walker where Cody Walker needs to play. And that's I think that's the biggest thing. I think Latrell's good for a try or a try assist in the game. But last year with Cody Walker scoring 36, was it 30 odd try assists throughout the entire year, then they turn around and go, I hope you can recreate that without Adam Reynolds. Like, he's not a leader.
Yeah, and scoring that, setting up that many tries isn't going to happen back-to-back years often.
I don't see Cody Walker as a leader. I really...
No, that's what I mean. That's why I said, are they missing Latrell? Just his presence at the back. He's definitely a leader.
Even if Latrell was around, like, I think Cameron Murray would have a harder job controlling him, because both Cody Walker and Latrell play such emotional games. Whereas, and right now, Cody Walker's like the point of attack, and Latrell Mitchell will come back and become that. I also think that everyone's mentioning about losing Reynolds. I think Gagai's more of an issue, to be honest. Like, he was on that left hand side that made him good. He created a lot, and his defensive output was second to none. That's his strength. Like, he's very strong attacking, but he's a very strong stronger defender.
Mm.
And I think they're missing that more than often than not, to be honest, because they're just struggling in every facet. But having they lost at least, 400 games between Reynolds and Gagai in one crack.
And they've cycled through that position with Paulo, they've used Tass.
Yeah.
Mel.
Like, I honestly think that's more of a concern right now. Because, like I said, Reynolds was no slouch, wasn't the best defensive, but Gagai was.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not saying that side's getting ripped apart, but what I'm saying is that leadership in defense is not there anymore.
With regards to Brisbane's defense, a huge play by Herbie Farnworth in the first half to dislodge a ball at Tane Milne. Was destined for the try line. It says on here, Tullamount lost the ball. Herbie Farnworth was a try-saving tackle there, more so than Milne losing the ball. I think he would have held on to it if not for Farnworth. So it was that last gasp sort of play the Broncos have been needing or have been missing over the last two seasons, and we're starting to see more and more of it. I think the biggest thing here, though, was the fact that Broncos won as they did without Haas or Kurt Capewell there. Pat Carrigan running for 142 metres, had a big say in that. And Reynolds' kicking game was... He was putting the ball on the platter for his wingers. Selwyn Cobbo had a real good game. Corey Oates, obviously, picking up the first try there for the Broncos. And as a Manly fan, I'm actually kind of nervous about Magic Round as opposed to 3 or 4 weeks ago, where I was really looking forward to just standing there having a beer and enjoying a win, a likely win. Now, not so much. We should be in for a cracking game next weekend between those two.
It'd be a good battle between Cherry and Reynolds.
Yeah, that really will.
That'd be a good battle. But the only question I have for Broncos is, can they can Reynolds keep it up?
Oh, I think he can. It's been the last couple of weeks he's really started hitting his stride.
Yeah, look, he's proven he can, but reality of it is when you actually look at their sets, like, they're structured well, but there's just missing that, I know it was on the weekend, but they're missing something like a forward lead, someone sitting on the front, something like that is missing. And while they look good against them, not even Payne Haas. Like, the last year, when just that aggressive control forward, like, Payne Haas is nothing. He's not aggressive. And I think them, like, last year with Penrith winning the grand final, they had Fisher Harris, that big dominant. For years and years, Roosters had Maria Hargraves. Melbourne keeps cycling through different ones. I think that's what Broncos are missing. I think that's what Reynolds needs.
They had Matt Lodge.
Yeah, but he doesn't bend the line. He goes to the line, he pulls up and he turns around and tries to offload, whereas Fisher Harris and Rory Hargraves just fucking bend it when they need to. Like, for example, Isaiah Yeo on the weekend, when they needed an offload, he offloaded it. When they needed him to run, they run. And it'll come for, like, the likes of Carrigan and Haas and...
I'm not going to say Flag.
Palacia. Don't say Flag. No. Palacia. But they're just not...
Maybe Xavier Wilson when he gets back. Is he anything like that?
Look, no. Well, best way to explain it is, in the Penrith team right now, you've got Isaiah Yeo controlling the middle third and Reynolds calling, going, not Reynolds, Cleary going, I want the ball in the third tackle here.
Yep.
And Isaiah Yeo puts him there. Reynolds is legitimately the only shot caller in that Broncos team, which is very, very old school. Like, that used to be what it was like in the 90s and 80s. Well,
who else is play caller for Penrith?
Yo.
He's not the play caller. You said he'll put the ball there, but Cleary's on calling.
No, shots. But he manipulates which side of the rock they're right on, who runs. And then when it's needed, he'll run. If not, he'll offload. Like, there's no one in that four pack who's using their head for the Broncos. They're all using their attitudes on point and they're running hard, but there's no one using their head, where Reynolds is the only one dictating where everyone needs to go. And that's an 80-minute hard effort to do. And I think if he just someone, because Tyson Gamble's not cutting, he's got a great attitude, but he's not doing fuck all, really. He's just in everyone's face. That's essentially what he does out there.
I think what you're describing to me is more of a dummy half job.
Well, they don't have that either.
No, that's probably, the biggest answer.
That's my point. Like, Reynolds can't...
Reynolds, do everything.
Yeah, well, he's controlling the middle thirds. He's controlling both sides right now. There's no one taking any slack off Reynolds. Where last year, you know, Cody, he could give it... He was the controller and he goes, Cody Walker gave it to him. He gave it to Cody Walker when Cody Walker wanted it. Damien Cook could run out of dummy half and create something. What that does is take the pressure off him to be able to be the only one creating, and that has more longevity in it. Whereas right now, if he's doing every single play, every single set for 80 minutes, that's a hard task. That's a hard ask. And he just doesn't have a penetrating forward in the middle. He's got very consistent tackling forwards, but no one's just going to bend the line. Pass could, but they're not using him correctly as far as I'm concerned, but that's another story. But they also don't have anyone in the middle assisting Because what do we got? Who's playing hooker? Is it Turpin or Pace? Right.
We'll move it on.
Yeah.
We got the point.
Yes.
But, yeah, if it's on Reynolds the whole season, it's not going to be sustainable. They'll have good games. Let's just hope it's not next week from my point of view. Congratulations to anyone who could sit through this second game. Well, sorry, the first game on the Friday night. Canberra have ended their 5-game losing streak with a 14-4 victory over Canterbury. However, Joe lost Jared Croker, as we mentioned earlier.
Oh, sad about this.
I got this one just because I went Raiders at home. That was literally the only thing. I'll congratulate everyone who went Broncos. And from my point, Wall and I did pick the Rabbitohs, but we did say we would not be surprised at all with a Broncos victory because we were worried. But we obviously didn't pick them at the same time. Elliot Whitehead and Matt Frawley set up a 10-0 lead. Corey Waddell penalised for a high tackle on Schneider after hard time, and that gave Warriors their 12-0 lead. And I honestly thought at 10-0 it was already out of reach. At 12-0, it's only another 2 points, but Bulldogs, we know their high score of the season is only 16 points. And as soon as it starts getting up into the from anything from 12 upwards, I keep thinking where the hell are the Bulldogs going to score points from outside of Addo Carr. Yeah, these are two teams that are not inspiring anyone with their play. And
as far as I'm concerned with the Bulldogs, the only way they can win is if the other team lets them win. That's my opinion on them. Like, I don't see them winning any other way.
Yeah, neither of these teams right now are good teams. Yeah.
And, you know, Bulldogs are playing Newcastle this weekend. I'm cool now.
Yeah, this is true. So, one storyline to take away from this, and yeah, I guess it's a tick of improvement here for the Raiders. When we went and watched them live, they were the dominant half. They were the dominant side against the Warriors, but they didn't score enough when they had the opportunity, but then they also made dumb mistakes down the other end to let the Warriors back in. In this game, the Raiders enjoyed 61% possession and had an additional 50 tackles inside Canterbury's 20-meter zone. So again, struggling to score points, Jack Whiten was out. The difference in this game was they didn't then allow Canterbury to score down the other end, even due to the frustration that they weren't scoring enough themselves. Canterbury ended up completing at 65% for the match with 14 errors in there, following on from South the night before, completing at less than 70%. That's just not going to get it done. I don't really have anything else on this one. It wasn't a game of highlight moments outside of probably maybe Matt Frawley's try, I guess.
Yeah, that was really cool.
It was definitely just an individual piece. A double dummy run. Yeah, unless you've got anything else.
No. All right, next game. Parramatta 22 over Penrith 20. By far the best game of the year. I made sure I watched this one just to see it. It was hard.
You made sure you watched it just to see it. That's good. Love it.
I'm tired. I'm so tired. I was particularly impressed with Parramatta's forwards. Ali and Junior Paulo definitely stood out in this game. Like, Junior Paulo, he was the biggest prop on the field by at least 15 kilos, and he played the most minutes out of all of them. And then Papali'i, like, Kikau was playing well, but I don't think he's ever come up with it against a second rower who every tackle when Kikau ran hurt him. It was this hard the whole game. And I don't think Kikau was ready for that. Next game he will be because he's a good player. But, like, he came into the – like, he's always a big dude. And Papali'i is definitely smaller than him, but he fucking had a crack on the weekend. I was so stoked. Luai is a myth as far as I'm concerned. He went completely missing when Cleary could have used some help in this game as a, from his 5'8". Like, you, this went hiding in the biggest game in a year so far for Penrith, and everyone else was having a crack except for him. And yeah, it was just, it's just fun to watch. Like, it was just, if you wanted to show someone what proper rugby league is, you don't show them the Canberra Bulldogs game, you show them the Parramatta Penrith game.
Obviously, this game had two controversial moments. The try awarded to Reid Marnie. I was fine with the try. I think he was in a position to get the ball. He was close enough to the line, and if he hadn't been held onto beforehand, there was more than a chance, I believe, that he would have taken that ball with momentum. And with a little bit of momentum, that would have been close enough to get to the line anyway. What was your view on that one?
Yeah, it was good. It was fine. Like, I've seen, there's not much more they could have ruled on, because it was either a penalty right there or a penalty try. And the fact that Marnie is, you got to bring into account that count that close. Old mate had him up top, which, and Marnie is probably, he's probably one of the strongest hookers for the chest.
Yeah.
I don't think, even if he didn't have his hand, I genuinely believe if it wasn't before, he would have been a try. I genuinely believe that. So I have no issue with it.
Kick out
thing, clear knock on. Referee put his whistle in his hand, which... in his mouth, which ended up in the try. Referee made a mistake. It is what it is. These guys made, I'm looking at it now.
Maybe called a try. What about the bunker review?
Oh, but I actually like that. See, I have a massive issue with going back five plays for foul play. Yeah. I have a big issue with that when that happens. And yeah. I think as far as when a tackle's done, that's no more ruling on it.
Yeah, right.
As far as I'm concerned. And look, between the two of them, they missed, nearly 62 tackles.
Yeah.
They made 16 errors. So the referee made one. These guys made close to 80.
Cool. I'm happy with that too. And
paid more as well.
What about the... I know this wasn't talked about as much. The Gutherson try in the corner with kick-out line on the ground.
Oh, that pissed me off to no end.
It is cost us every try.
Fuming. How the fuck do you get poked in the eye and go off for a HIA? And do you know what shitted me off about this more? A couple of days later, it got brought up, and Penrith were questioning the trainer for Parramatta running in front of the post with Cleary's kicking.
Yeah.
He missed.
I was just happy that they scored the try. Like, just get up and get back in the line.
One, Penrith shouldn't be complaining about what trainers do on the field after their fucking effort last year.
Yeah.
And two, you guys blatantly cheated the rules with HIAs with Viliami kick-out. So someone's got to pull their head in here.
Yeah, I just love the fact that he was on the ground and Gutherson literally just jumped and was like, oh, thanks, I'll take the try here.
Yeah, there's kick-out is trying to, I don't know what he was trying to do. I just don't understand how that justifies a HIA. I don't know. What the NRL should be doing is going, okay, the third-party doctor in the bunker can rule on shit that is a HIA and pull it back.
Yeah.
I honestly think he should look back and say, you know what? That's an interchange for you, because that is bullshit. That is not what I rule a HIA.
Yeah, cool. I'm happy with that one. I'm not going to put it down as a surprise, but biggest thing if I was taking away something from this as a Parramatta fan, would be the fact that they were actually behind midway through the second half and then came back to win. That's different to being behind midway through the first half or even at half time. With 14 minutes to go, they were down by 4 points. And I don't know, 4 points down to say the Titans or the Tigers is one thing, but 4 points down to Penrith in Penrith after your last week's performance or non-performance against the Cowboys, to me as an Eels fan, that's huge to see. It shows that that fight is still there. Now, it has to be consistent, and it has to come regardless of who you're up against. It can't just be the Storm and Penrith, because that's only going to give you, what, 8 points for the whole season? They've got to be able to do it against the rest of the competition.
I made it very clear how I feel about this Parramatta squad.
Yeah. So
I've actually put money on them losing this weekend against the Roosters already. As soon as they won that game, I went in sports betting like,
there we go. All right, let's jump to the first game on Saturday. And, well, it wasn't the best game of the round. If you like points, this is the game to watch. It was days like this where I'm jealous of every Manly fan who actually lives down in Manly, because Brookie was picture perfect. It was a complete sellout a day before the game, and it just looked an absolute picture. There was smatterings of orange and black throughout the crowd of West Tigers, but it was pretty much all maroon and white. And the new grandstand down that end just adds another feature to that ground. I think overall, Hasler's going to be happy with the 2 points, happy that Trbojevic got back and got through the game, but letting in 22 points against to the Tigers is not going to be something to be overly pleased with. I knew going into this game it was going to be tougher than versus the Tigers last year. And with the Broncos and the Storm and see the Parramatta Penrith coming up after that, there's a big 2 points to pick up because the run's about to get pretty tough. The feel-good story for this game was Ben Trbojevic scoring his first try, which ended up turning into a double, filling in at centre. I was worried.
He played second row, dude. Harper played in the centres with Cooler.
Oh, yeah, sorry. He was listed at centre, and then there was a late withdrawal of... Oh, God, I'm getting my games messed up now. Who came out? Schuster came out late with a calf injury. Either way, he was strong. Both his tries weren't givens. He had to work for both of them, twisting out of a tackle, breaking out of a tackle. That was really good to see. Cherry Evans had another fantastic game. Foran, some of his passing is, and his decision-making is what the Titans will be picking up, when to pass the right ball at the right time. And he's done that for however long, and the Garrick try was an example of that. For the Tigers, I think they're showing a hell of a lot more this year than they were last year. A game like this, or an occasion like this, with Brookie, a packed out crowd like that, especially after Manly go up 18-0, you could have been putting the writing on the wall there. Yeah, that would have folded last season. So credit to him for the comeback. Stafford Taylor, man, he's exciting to watch. At fullback, albeit getting turned inside out by Cooler at one stage.
I think despite the fact you're right, letting 22 points in, but I think when those points are scored is in the 49th to the 55th minute, which was generally when your reserves are on. And if you look at the reserve stats for your team on the weekend, you had Tapau, Walker, Sipley, and Dului. They really struggled on the weekend.
Yeah.
And that's a massive concern, because you're only missing, what, Schuster?
We're missing Schuster, Olakau.
Yeah. In your forward specifically.
Oh, in the forward specifically. Well, yeah, that's two pretty big forwards, because then that shifts back to the bench, and that's just Trbojevic back to the bench.
Which makes it,
much better. Oh, Paseka. Paseka's out as well.
Yeah, sorry. So that is a concern for you moving, depending when those guys get back, because your bench period was quite big, especially in the middle. I'm pretty sure that's when Tigers started to go, when you were starting front row rotated out, even moving to Powell to the bench and Kepi start. Aloai probably played his best game in a Manly jersey on the weekend.
He would have loved that too, going up against the Tigers.
Yeah. On the other hand, the only reason I watched this game was to see the Trbojevic triplets have a run.
They're not bloody triplets. Gerbe, Burbo, and Turbo.
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, so that was cool. And there's another one coming through, isn't there?
Yeah.
There's four of them. So, yeah, keep an eye on that. It was awesome to see. And I really hope that Trbojevic gets the free jersey next week. We see him playing the centres because he looks like a pretty damn versatile player. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he is. He's a centre second row, and that's... Oh, he's a second row first, the centre second.
It's like he's got
a cross between the two of them.
Tom's height and Jake's work rate. Like it's not a bad combo. I don't know how quick he is, but he seems like he's got Tom and Jake's strength. Sorry.
Yeah, 100%. He was picked up as he was touted as the most talented coming through. Tom's already exceeded expectations. And he's at another level now. We know that. So, but one thing out of this, if you want to look at the most pure form of what family can mean, listen to Jake talk about his brothers, like especially Ben and like when Tom had the Dally M award. I wouldn't be shocked. How Jake talks about it. He talks about his brothers like Steve Irwin used to talk about crocodiles, eh? He's so emotional and he means everything he says is 100% sincere. So another thing, did you see the kickoff, like the very first kickoff? Bloody brilliant.
Don't tell me it was short.
A short grubber. Cherry Evans straight across the ground.
Oh, yeah, I did see that, yeah.
To Jake, who... was about 2 meters behind everyone else for the kickoff, which is hilarious, and he's the first one there. So that was brilliant to see. I'm like, yeah, that's it. More of it, more of it, more of it. So, yeah, Broncos Manly Friday night magic round should be an absolute cracker.
Luke's the next one. Is he going to play? He looks a bit old.
No, I don't think. I think it'll just be these three.
Oh, so Luke's not going to.
All right,
okay.
Yeah. All righty. Let's go on to where we're up to. Second game on the Saturday. So this is the Roosters and the Titans. This game was looking tight early. I was listening to this one on the radio in the car on the way home before I got inside to watch it. And at that stage, it was, what was that, 16-12 all? Titans had scored. Tedesco, they're up 10-4. Yeah, 10-0. So I was like, oh man, this is going to be pretty close. It's going to be a tight game. And between that end of the drive and getting inside, it had blown out to 24-10 at halftime, and then a 20-6 second half by the Roosters. Tedesco with a hat trick, Joe Suwali with a double. I'm starting to find the line with more regularity now, despite one being called back last week. And big boy Takiaho getting over the stripe as well. For the Titans, Bo Formo, Sam Lassone, and Herman Sasa. So a good day for the big boys on the park, but another disappointing fade out by the Titans. Once the going got tough, as they have all too recently, collapsed.
Yeah, look,
Oh, great. There we go. Let's move on.
Yeah, no, that's all I can do. Like, they're grasping at straws. They built this team, and they're like, youth, and it's just not holding to the NRL. And as I think I said it not longer, I'm not the biggest fan of Justin Holbrook, because he's going away as to what he was touted. Like, he was touted as this very strong defensive coach.
Mm.
And that was considered his strength. And it's not what the Titans are in any shape or form. And the players in squad City as a tough, pretty defensive team. So I really struggle with why Justin Holbrook's recruitment strategies and overall philosophies that the Gold Coast are playing with aren't to what he was, you know, advertising himself as.
Yeah, they're playing different to how his teams played in England. And I thought they were he was going to try and get back to that at some stage, but it hasn't looked that way, and it's like, not looking that way anytime soon.
It seems like they have fun attacking. Like their attack is very up how you see it, like English Rugby League, actually, like English Super League. That part's the same, but there's no defensive grit.
There's no effort, no desire in defense.
It's just crap, we have to do this to get the ball, not let's do this. Come on, kind of thing. It kind of annoys me.
All right, that's five down. Let's we should get through this one as well, and then we'll have final break. So Cowboys over the Knights. I said leading into this game in our previous show, to me, Cowboys are the most fun team to watch in the comp. They didn't do anything to let me down in that case this game. It was tighter for longer than I expected this game to be before the Cowboys put their foot down and kind of ran away with this one to win by Cowboys. 20. What did I say?
Titans.
Oh, so yeah, sorry. We were just talking about that, weren't we? But you look at the second half of this one, it was 16-12 to the Knights at halftime, and the Cowboys came out and scored 24 unanswered points in the second half. Tries in the 43rd, 46th, 58 minutes killed the game off, and then Healing Lucky got another one in the 74th minute. And, man, some of the tries in this game were just awesome to watch. Kyle Felt had another one to add to his hat trick the week before. Valentine Holmes again picking up another. Jeremiah Nanai seems to be like the same sort of players, but the difference with the Cowboys, so say some of the other teams, is they've got multiple players scoring at minimum fortnightly almost. Like, you're almost expecting to look at every Cowboys sheet now and see either Dearden, Felt, Holmes, Nanai, or Drinkwater, I guess, on the score sheet. And it happened again. And Holmes' conversion kicking has been pretty damn good this year.
Yeah. Cowboys are looking... They're actually like what Titans should be. Like, they're very free-flowing in attack, but they stick to their structures when they need to get to a position, especially out of the half. But the defense actually has some effort in resolving it. Like, their tries aren't like Melbourne Storm structured where they just break down a defense. They're cool. Let's just go with what the fuck's happening right now and just see what happens, kind of thing. And it's working for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool to watch. For Newcastle, okay, so 2 weeks ago they got beaten 39-2. The week after that, they got beaten 50-2. This way, and they got beaten 36-16. And as I alluded to last week, early in the pod, Newcastle had 4 out of 17 and probably would have struck their top 17. But the difference between this game, and don't get me wrong, Cowboys are in the top four, so they should be considered in the same breath as those other two teams. But the difference between this game and the last two is I actually saw some effort. Mm. Like, as you said, they're pretty weak. And they lost Jack Johns, starting second rower.
They lost Tyson Frizzell before the game.
Yeah, which, you know, Jack Johns starting second rower shows where Newcastle were really at.
And they lost Edric Lee in the second half.
Yeah, and obviously with the Roosters, that can't be an excuse. But, like, last 2 weeks, the biggest disappointment I can say about Newcastle is there was no, even though we're getting flogged, there's no pride. This game, they had effort, and like they were trying really hard. And I will say Ponga had one of his better games, and which was good to see, but obviously it's not bringing out the results, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, they definitely played. They definitely played better.
Yeah. And like I said, this weekend we're bringing back six players, and that doesn't include Clifford or Frizzell or Gagai. Like, that's nuts as far as I'm concerned. That's insane. Like, they're bringing back six players that doesn't include him. Like, that's how the fuck does that work?
Yeah. I was just trying to think of, I'm going to phrase this as best I can. When the Storm are in a ruthless mood, when Cronulla are in a ruthless mood, Penrith as well, they can sustain it for a majority of a game. Cowboys are still finding their way of how to do that. Once they click, they can score points almost set by set. They showed it against Parramatta and Darwin. They showed it against the Knights here. But if you can stay in the grind with them, you've got a chance of beating them. What the Cowboys, I think, are going to continue to look to improve on is getting a handle on games earlier. They can't keep relying on this second half surge. And I think by how much their defense has tightened up this year compared to last, they're giving themselves a chance to do that in the second half of the season. So if I'm a Cowboys supporter, I'm really excited and hopeful about what the rest of the season is going to produce for my team. We'll come back with the last two games in a sec. All right, so who do we want to talk about here? Kenny Bromwich in his 200th game, his brother scoring a try in Kenny's game, Papenhuyzen and Remus Smith being injured, Nick Meaney showcasing his pace, Cam Munster and Harry Grant's masterclass, or the fact of how big a gap there is from some of the teams that the Dragons have been beating to coming up against a Melbourne team in Melbourne. There's not many positives, or any positives really, for St. George to take out of this one. And that's coming off. How many wins did they have leading into this game?
Yeah, what annoyed me was that I know there was late injuries, whatever, but the combination between Bird and Hunt has been really strong since he got moved in there. And Amone is really struggling.
Yeah.
Like, he really struggled. He even Wall would be the first one to admit. So, and Bird had his worst game he's had in since the change, about a month ago. And I can't remember what the changes were or why
happened. Remember, he'd gone out with a broken arm. Well, not a broken arm, an injured arm the week before as well.
Yeah, but he got named at six and there was a late change.
Yeah, true.
And I can't remember, I don't know, since he's out. I remember there was a reason for it. But if I was Anthony Griffin coming against the Melbourne team, I would have had the best backline and halves combination I could going into it. Sims played up front.
Yeah, Sims played up front and Bird moved to the back row with Amone to start at 5'8".
Yeah, and there was a reason. I can't remember off the top of my head what it was, but the reality of it is that if you go on up against Melbourne and in the mood they're in, you don't fuck with something that works. And that's exactly what they did. And it
if you're trying to get Amone back on track, put him at starting 5'8 against Melbourne in Melbourne against their forward pack who are going to try and run straight at him. When you could have had Jack Bird in that line instead, didn't make any sense to me either.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I'm not the biggest fan of, like, Jack Bird's a good player, but I'm not the biggest fan of him at second row anyway, to be honest. But hard and fast of it is, they need to, he needs to stick with what works, because if you're going to, a word you wouldn't use to describe St. George in the last 3 years is consistent. And the best way to get consistency is to, you know, at bare minimum for the coach to do, is keep the same team week in, week out. Yes, you know, injuries, but if you have the ability to keep your core there on the field, you do that. And he's not doing that.
A couple of numbers out of this game as well, which are incredible. Melbourne has scored 325 points in the first 9 rounds. That breaks a record held by the Roosters from 1935. Dragons had just 42% of the ball and conceded 17 offloads to 5. And if there's a team you don't want to give second phase play to, it's the Storm, especially with Harry Grant sniffing around. And doesn't he just play the dummy half role different to everybody else? He's always on the balls of his feet, a la Damien Cook. But I think his deception of passing and running is better than a dummy half that I can remember. The ball's out in two hands the whole time. He can pass right to left with the same accuracy, strength, and speed. But when he takes off, the ball's in two hands. He literally runs at pace with the ball out in front. And if he decides the last second to run it, that's when he tucks it right before the line. Whereas most dummy halves, when they go to scoot, the ball's already under the wing, 3-4 metres out from the line.
What you just described, for the last minute is how every dummy half should be taught from the age of 5.
No, but like I'm not saying he's running. Like running with the ball in two hands keeps the defence at bay, obviously. But the pace that he can run with the ball in two hands compared to the pace under his wing hardly changes, which is ridiculously hard to do.
I would say that I'd say 95% of the hookers in the comp.
No way.
Yeah, I would. I'd definitely say that for them. Mine is probably Lachlan Croker. Because the reality of it is that what you described should be every hooker in the competition. Yet you say he plays so differently. He plays like an old school dummy half, creative. Like there's so many hookers these days. Andrew McCulloch, Chris Randall, Lachlan Croker would be Egan. One. Egan, Aaron all Clark. they're doing is it's a badge of honor to make 50 tackles and have 2 scoots.
That's what I said. He's playing differently to everybody else.
But the reality of it is that he's just what hookers were 30 years ago. It's no different. And, he's elite at it, and he'd probably survive 30 years ago.
I'd say he's a much better pass than those 30 years ago. Yeah, he's a kicker.
There is discrepancies, but my point is what you just described, you know, ball in two hands, running, selectively running, being a really gritty. Like,
oh, that bit is definitely old school, 100%.
Yeah, but all of it's old school. Like, I'm really disappointed that our backup hooker is someone like Chris Randall, who is not a focal point in attack. Because the last 5 premierships, minus probably the Roosters ones with Jake Friend, like Apisau, Coruscant, Brandon Smith, Cameron Smith, Harry Grant, those players, there's always a focal point out of attack, out of dummy half. The teams that don't have that really struggle. And I don't know what's happening, what happened in the last, say, 10 years for all these developmental hookers that tackling is their focus. Like, what happened in the development that there's not that Harry Grant, the way he plays, while it's exceptional, is a breath of fresh air for Adam. Because it's exactly how you should play hooker. He's the most... If I could create a hooker, I'd create Harry Grant. And that's not even me being imaginative. That's just me going, that's what I think a hooker should be. Whereas, you know, there's no... It's just so... Like, Cameron Smith was a great balance because he could make 50 tackles but could attack. Jake Friend makes 70 tackles, couldn't attack. Apisau Coruscant wasn't... I wouldn't say he'd make 50 tackles regularly, but he could attack better than anyone else. There's no balanced hookers out there, which Harry Grant is. So it's just... It amazes me that the hookers coming through these days aren't like that at all.
Yeah, and it makes a difference because the teams usually near the top have dummy halves like that. Reece Robson's made a huge difference to the Cowboys since he's gone.
It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Some are really good, eh? It's a shame, and we'll look into the team list, that they're not going to be full strength going up against Penrith at Magic Round, but it should still be a cracking game. And talking about not full strength, let's finish with the Sharks beating the Warriors by 19 points, despite playing with 12 men for over 60 minutes and 11 men for a 10-minute period, when obviously Will Kennedy was already sent off and then Ramien got 10 in the bin. And that didn't stop them, let's just say. They actually scored points while they were down to 11 men, which was crazy. And the win was the first by a team with less than 13 players on the field in 14 years, after Seagulls managed to beat the Raiders in 2008 when Adam Cuthbertson was sent off. A little bit flashback for you. Oh, gosh, the Warriors. Did they lose their way or did they lose their way?
Warriors. Oh, look.
They made Connor Tracy look really good at times.
Look,
he got a double.
Warriors are a team that there's no real... what's the word? There's no real way to describe them, because I wouldn't say they're a strong defensive unit, and I wouldn't say when they're on their best at attacking that they're overly great either. Like, they're quite
below par. I believe you're saying a poor team.
No, they're well, yeah.
A bottom eight team.
I don't like saying that about the Warriors, because I love the Warriors, but they're below par in both major facets of the game, which is
amazing. They're on the top eight.
Yeah, when we went to that Canberra game on the weekend a couple of weeks ago at Redcliffe, their first two tries, when Jordan Rapana showed why he shouldn't be playing fullback, they were completely against the run of play. Like, they were flukish at best. And there's the argument to say they didn't actually deserve those tries, but they got them, and which made it a decent win. And in this game, when Cronulla didn't give them those opportunities, literally a try handed over on a plate, they really struggled.
Yeah.
And they're actually been very active in the player market the last couple of days. So, and they bought two young players in key positions. So I don't know how that's going to all go, but they also left a halfback. They lost two halfbacks in the last 2 weeks. So 3 weeks, sorry, which is...
We're talking about opportunities, man. They're talking about opportunities being handed to them. They had a two-person advantage for that 10-minute period, and their last play options were horrible. Obviously, they lost Aiken to the HIA through a legal play. So Bailey Sirenin was activated as the 18th man. But
so I spent a lot of time on one podcast last year explaining how I think Sean Johnson should be played. And last year, when he was leading the Daly M's at one point and the highest try, not even 2 years ago, I can't remember, when he played for Cronulla.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure when John Morris started coaching, or whoever took over, who took over starter last year? Either way, when they had him stuck on one side attacking the entire time, he mesmerized the defense.
There we go.
They really struggled to all teams struggled to stop him when he was just peppering one three or four players on one side. And then when he does that for a few weeks, the coaches go, "Oh mate, you should roam so you can run around." And when Johnson, I think, has too much creative control, I think he struggles more. I really think that his best way to play is to have someone controlling the hub, and then him doing what a Cody Walker done last year, and to stand that left-hand side and just rip apart teams by yourself. Because that's,
you mean
that's
the defense's left-hand side, Sean Johnson's like the attacking right?
Oh, I don't care which side he's on. He's on attacking right. Just stay on. Yeah. Like I'm saying, Cody Walker was on the Rabbits' left-hand side all last year. He very rarely roamed, and he just ripped apart teams for fun. Sean Johnson, I'm pretty sure he's a right-hand player because he's got a part left to right. He's got a left and right footstep, predominantly left to get on the outside of people. So put him on the right-hand side, and that's your channel all game. You do not deviate from that side. The rest of the field will get looked after by a hooker in the opposing half, but I think because he's not a controlling half. He's a player who's going to play what's in front of him.
Yeah.
And he's got the speed. He's got the skill. He's got everything. I just don't think he has the ability to not handle pressure, but dictate, do it out, play
dictate
like Adam
terms.
Reynolds or play, control. You know, like Nathan Cleary or Cooper Kropp. He doesn't have that. He's the guy you give the ball to when you're attacking, you've got momentum, and he will rip you apart. And it really annoys me that every team he goes to, you're like, oh, he's going to be controlling and stuff like that. That's not how he plays. He plays off the cuff at all times. And if all he needs is a ballsy second rower next to him and an athletic center and a fast winger. And no team will stop that bloke. But for some reason, no one gives him that opportunity. And I feel like if they can find that half to control the rest of the team, they're going to win a lot more games that way with Sean Johnson now. I think he just really struggles with that burden of game plan.
It comes about when you've got Wade Egan's a hooker who doesn't really control, do anything through the middle. You've got Reece Walsh as a youngster still finding his way. And
yeah,
you got a new 5'8". But and like with those three also there, despite wanting to get the best out of Sean Johnson, none of those other three, well, one doesn't have the talent, the other two don't have the experience yet, really, to be that other person. So I agree with what you're saying, though, honestly, overall. And yeah, I agree. When the Warriors are doing well, it's better for the NRL. It's just, when's that ever going to happen?
I think they're coming up against the Tigers in Auckland. That's going to be an absolute fucking drubbing. Just the pure emotion of that would be really good. But yeah, I wish the NRL stepped in to stop Roger Tuivasa-Sheck leaving. I really do. I think the wider community would have been really happy if the NRL just propped him up by like $3 million to keep him to stay. To be honest, I don't think anyone would be clearing salary cut to be like, yeah, it's Roger Tuivasa-Sheck. That is fine.
Cronulla fans is probably the best thing you could have seen after the week before's effort against the Broncos, obviously despite Will Kennedy and Jesse Raymond's suspensions, but the team effort, the defense, the desire, the effort. I'm not saying those are the things that were missing against the Broncos. You just wanted to get back in the winner's circle, and this was one of the best wins these players and the club would have been part of or will be part of. It's not every day, like I said, that you win a game down with 12 men, let alone being down to 11 for a period of time. So that brings us to the end of round 9. We've got Magic Round coming up next. If we have a quick look at the ladder here at the end of round 9, Melbourne Storm are on top. Went just for the for and against to come up here. Yeah, by a bit. 225 points of for and against is already. So 16 points, 8 wins and a loss. Them and Penrith are going into the top of the table match next week. Cowboys stay in third place with the Sharks and Eels on 12, just separated by points differential. Roosters, Manly, Broncos finish out the top 8, all on 10 points apiece. So you've got first and second playing off next week. You've got seventh and eighth playing off. So either end of the top 8. You've also got Eels and Roosters. So that's really odd how that's all played out. So you got 6 of the top 8 teams all versing each other, which should be crackers. So bottom half of the draw, you got Rabbitohs, Warriors, Dragons all on 8 points, Raiders on 6, Tigers, Titans, Bulldogs and Knights all on 4 points with 2 wins and 7 losses. It's just that negative points differential of minus 134. Another weird one here. You got Bulldogs and Knights playing each other last week. They're both on the bottom of the table. And then you've got Rabbitohs and Warriors playing each other, and they're 9th and 10th. So there's going to be a lot of movement on the table next week, considering 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 of the teams that are versing each other are right next to each other on the table. I don't think I've ever seen that. That's crazy. Anyway, we'll be back with you guys Friday morning for the Magic Round preview, remembering there's no game on Thursday night. Bye.
There he is.
Thank you for tuning in to Six Again. Connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and the Six Again website. All links via the show's bio.